This meeting to order, and hopefully all of our members will join us as we go in the next few minutes here. So calling to order CVAG's Homelessness Committee. This is Wednesday, February 17th, 2021 at 10 a.m. If everyone could please mute your lines, but for the members, please do stay on video as much as possible. And for the public listening in, remember that you press *9 if you want to be heard in public comment. And we have two public comment times, first at the beginning on agenda items, and then at the end on non-agenda items. So first, if we can have a roll call, please.
City of Blythe. City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Coachella. City of Desert Hot Springs.
Here.
City of Indian Wells?
Present.
City of Indio? City of La Quinta?
Present.
City of Palm Desert?
Present. Hello, everyone.
City of Palm Springs?
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage? And Riverside County? For the record, I do see her as an attendee. We will move her to the panelist view. And Desert Healthcare District.
Here, thank you.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. I do think the city of Coachella has a little bit more important things to do right now since they're hosting the governor. Not that our work isn't important in this committee, but really excited to have the governor here in Coachella and in the Coachella Valley. The next item is public comment on agenda items. So do we have any public comment at this time? Remember, for the public, if you're on the phone, you can press *9. On Zoom, you can raise your hand under participants. Erica, is there any public comment?
We have none.
Okay, it's your last opportunity to press *9 or raise your hand on Zoom if you'd like to give public comment. If you miss this moment, we can come back to you. I know that's not a lot of notice to press *9, but there's no public comment at this time. So we will move to committee and CVAG staff announcements. So first for committee members, are there any comments at this time?
Madam Chair, just for the record, I have to leave a little bit early. I'm getting my second vaccine today, so I'm scheduled for 11 o'clock. So if you see me exit, I'll try to be on the phone anyway as I go.
That's great. Thank you very much. Other comments? Seeing none. CVAG staff, do you have any comments at this time?
Yes, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. On behalf of CVAG, I just want to extend a welcome back. This is our first meeting of the new year. We've started off 2021 with some really great momentum, and we've really been making a difference with our CV Housing First program, which you're hear about and with these agenda items. So just wanted to extend our welcome.
Thank you. And I'll just make a quick comment. We have allocated some of the $10 million that we received from the state, the city of Palm Springs, for permanent supportive housing units. We're doing that in coordination with the county, but we are reserving a chunk of that money for hopefully another Ivy Palm project. As you know, the Ivy Palm project fell through because the bankruptcy court wouldn't sell it to the county. Basically, it couldn't be approved by the trustee. It's really unfortunate for all of us because we want to see a project like that going forward, especially to offer, you know, a lot of services on site. So we continue to work with the county. We are a willing participant here. We have funding to do it. So for anyone who's listening, I know this committee really supports building a navigation center or permanent supportive housing with that funding, and we want to do it. So if you're a developer or an agency and you have interest in that, please let us know. So next we have the consent calendar. So there are two items, one to approve the November 18th, 2020 homeless committee meeting minutes. And then 5B is to authorize the executive director to take the necessary steps to accept the regional early action planning funding, so REAP funding, including negotiating and executing the necessary agreements with Southern California Association of Governments and Lift to Rise for a total not to exceed the amount of $558,000. And remember, this is what this committee approved last time and gave authorization to staff to apply for this funding. I think it's a really exciting moment that we're accepting $558,000 to do this regional planning work around homelessness and housing. So is there an item that any committee member would like to pull from the consent calendar?
Yes, Madam Chair, if we can pull item 5B as in Bravo, please.
Thank you. Any other items? Okay, so if I can have a motion to approve item 5A, the minutes, and then we'll pull item 5B for separate discussion. Is there a motion and a second?
I so move, Carol.
Second.
Thank you. A motion and a second. We'll just do, Erica, you just want to do not a roll call vote, but just by consensus. Is that
correct,
right?
Chair, if you just want to ask if there's any abstentions or no votes.
Thank you. Are there any abstentions or no votes? Okay, thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you. Motion passes. Okay, so item 5B, the authorization for that funding is pulled for separate discussion. Councilmember Jonathan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions, and I'm sorry if I whiffed the last meeting when this was discussed in more substantive detail. So maybe there'll just be very quick answers to my questions. But I don't recall that we actually approved these two specific funding areas for the $558,000. Did we do that, or did we just approve the funding in general?
Thank you, Councilmember Jonathan. I can address that. The motion that went back to the committee before was to seek input. And just as a little bit of history for those of you who may not have attended or may not remember before the holiday, that there are two one-time planning grants, LEAP with an L and REAP with an R. And REAP is what we were discussing. We did a pretty big solicitation of ideas, and based on the feedback we got from member jurisdictions and from the committee, including the Homelessness Committee, we came down to the two proposals that we submitted. There was a timing issue, you'll recall, of when we needed to get things to SCAG.
Okay, so the answer I heard is that this committee had not approved, for example, funding the Lift to Rise agreement or proposal or the consultant. So that's the answer I heard. So this is the first time this specific use of funds is before us.
They were the ideas brought forward before, but no, there was no actual vote. And as it pertains to the consultant, you may recall that at the beginning of last year, there was some discussion at the executive committee about pursuing this idea of an additional study. And that's part of where the consultant topic came from, was the direction that executive committee gave in early 2020.
Okay, I do have a few questions. So I know we need to be brief, and I'll try to be brief in my questions and ask you to do the same in your answers. Again, I'm understanding that this is the first time that the specific proposal from Lift to Rise before us. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, it was brought as one of the lists, but it wasn't voted on.
Okay, good. Thank you. So a few questions. And by the way, I'm a little surprised that an expenditure of over $500,000 is on a consent calendar. I'm not real pleased about that, but maybe that's just me. But in that regard, I'd like to get a better understanding. Your report indicates that Lift to Rise has a goal of 10,000 affordable housing units. How many of those have been built already?
Perhaps
10 of them have been built already. This is Carrie. And I can provide some context because part of the work that Lift to Rise does is a public-private partnership with Riverside County, and Riverside County committed to that 10,000 goal to reduce rent burden. So while there are some in the construction pipeline, none have been built already. Although we are 3 years into the public-private partnership that was initiated by the county and Live to Rise, they're just in the development and construction pipeline at this point.
How many?
I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but just to answer your question, none have been built yet.
Okay. The report indicates that the fundraising goal is $160 million. That's a lot of money. How realistic is that goal?
Chair, if I may, if we do have a member of Lift to Rise here, if there's going to be some, I'm not sure I can answer all of the council members' questions myself, but I do want to get him the answer. So if you'd like, we could call up Taylor from Lift to Rise to answer some of the questions, if the council member would like.
For council member Jonathan, do you want to ask questions just of staff now and then have the opportunity
do that
to call Lift to Rise if you'd like?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think if I need more clarification, we can come to the Lift to Rise staff. But I guess the follow-up question is the proposal. Well, let me ask the question. Is the proposal to spend $558,000 on a fundraiser?
No. So there are two parts to the total $558,000. Part of the funds are identified for work with Lift to Rise, which will be detailed in an MOU that our executive director would execute based on the recommendation here. The intent would be to have specific metrics, and that would be to establish the fund, launch the fund, the incentive fund that Lift is has outlined as part of its broader action plan. The other funds.
What portion of the 558 do you anticipate being allocated to a fundraising consultant to create this fund?
It's $304,000 to support Lyft's work. That's in the fiscal analysis.
How many years of a consulting contract is that?
The funds need to be spent by 2023.
2020 what?
2023, June of 2023. So about two and a half.
Will their proposal come back to this committee for approval before it's executed?
The recommendation by staff is to authorize the executive director to execute the MOU.
Okay. Let me go to the other recommended use, which I guess would be $254,000.
Correct.
And that's for CVAG to spend it to analyze funding options for affordable housing. Is that correct?
Affordable housing and the nexus to transportation. At the beginning of 2020, this was a discussion that was held at the executive committee, and there was a joint meeting in February of 2020 with the transportation committee. And at the time, there was a lot of discussion as a region about a potential sales tax measure through RCTC. And CVAG staff asked the committees about seeking legislation for a sales tax measure that would look at the funding opportunities for both housing and transportation. At that time, the executive committee felt that additional research needed to be done. You may recall this went back to the CV Hart committee at one point for some discussion. This was just on the beginnings of COVID, and CV Hart said the committee's consensus was to take another look at this later. When this funding opportunity came up through REAP, we saw this as an opportunity to get the data that the executive committee was looking for and to further analyze that idea, which would then so based on the $254,000 proposal, we would put out an RFP, we would hire a consultant that would go back to executive committee and then conduct research on funding opportunities such as the sales tax measure.
Okay, so the answer is yes. And almost done, Chair. As I recall, when this was brought up last year, there was tremendous pushback. In fact, a denial, staff's recommendation to explore sales tax as an option at that time. Now, especially under COVID, why is staff coming back to us and including sales tax as an option for funding?
The feedback from the executive committee, the staff recommendation at the time was to seek legislation to authorize a sales tax. It was not to recommend a sales tax. And at the time, the feedback we received and the direction and the vote that we received from both transportation and exec was to seek it, was to get additional information. And actually at the time we were authorized for some funding for a consultant for this project. When REAP came along, we found this is a better opportunity to do the research that exec had directed.
Okay. I guess I heard the answer or the response. I'm not sure that I heard an answer, but we'll come back to that with, under discussion perhaps. Final question. So has staff looked at other options for use of this $558,000, and what are those alternatives that we should consider?
Staff spent a lot of time looking at the alternatives. We went to the TPS committee, which is a group of planners from all your member jurisdictions. We solicited ideas. We were on their agenda twice and sought feedback from them. We did a public request for proposals and kind of went through the ideas. We floated a number of ideas to SCAG, and these were the ones that rose to the top based on the consensus we heard through the feedback.
All right, so I'm hearing staff did its homework. Has this committee been presented with those alternatives for our consideration?
That was part of the discussion in November when we presented options that were on the table at the time.
Yeah, I think there was general discussion, but I mean, well, okay, I'm hearing the response. Chair, that ends my questions. I do have some comments at the appropriate time.
I think we can move to comments. Go ahead, we'll do them all per member.
Okay, I guess my colleagues on this committee can discern my concern. I'm not convinced that we should be spending over $500,000, to provide a fundraiser for Lift to Rise that can explore the feasibility of raising $160 million. At the cost of over $300,000, I think we're open for criticism and justifiably so. I'm also not convinced that we should spend over $250,000 to explore funding options that I think are more appropriate at the state or federal level, and particularly ones that include an alternative that received great resistance, that of a sales tax initiative. Particularly now under COVID, when our local businesses and our local cities are struggling to survive and to find a way past this pandemic. So I think what I would like to do is send staff back to the drawing board and give us a list of specific alternatives. If this funding is available, let's look at what our options are. If it's not, I'd rather not waste the taxpayers' money.
Thank you, Council Member. Other comments from committee members?
Madam Chair, absolutely. I share the same comments as Councilmember Savvy Jonathan does. We met with them last year as a subcommittee. We asked a lot of those questions. It didn't really kind of go anywhere after that, probably because of COVID. We didn't have any other meetings. I heard the timing of 2023, so it does seem like we have some time that we can bring this back for a full discussion, rather than on a consent calendar agenda item, and explore some of those possibilities. So I would like to move that we continue this item for further discussion.
Thank you. So if I can ask a procedural question of Erica. So in terms of the authors, I see that there's parts to this item. So it looks like there's the authorization to accept the $558,000 and to move forward in negotiating with Lift to Rise and SCAG. So could you just explain for the committee members, since there's a motion on the floor, the timeline in terms of, you know, accepting the funding, or if we need to choose a purpose for that, and if we're able to continue this item with without losing out on the opportunity for funding?
Sure, thank you, Chair. The application to SCAG was due in December, which is why we did the outreach that was done through committees and member jurisdictions. So CVAG, based on the feedback did apply and has been awarded in an award letter for these fundings for this purpose. This was based on the feedback. So SCAG is anticipating that we would then work to finalize an MOU, which is why the staff recommendation is before you.
Is there an opportunity to go back to SCAG and revise the use of funds, the proposed intended use of funds?
Frankly, Councilmember, I'm not sure. We had to file an initial application back in September, which CVAG did. We did point that out. The proposal we originally did, the feedback we'd received from member jurisdictions is that these were better options for the funding. And so we've already revised our application and submitted it to SCAG based on the feedback we got in the fall.
And what's the scope? And then Director Rogers, I see you, so I'll go to you next. Though I have a motion, so I'm gonna ask for a second. But what's the scope of ability to negotiate? So I hear that there's concerns about what this might look like. So is it possible to authorize acceptance of the funds, but then give direction in terms of the scope of the grants?
We did submit a scope of work based on the direction we'd received from committees in the fall. In terms of the MOU with Lyft in particular, there would be some timing, I think, to bring that back to committee. And certainly an RFP would be issued and that would come back to committee for approval. And I see Tom also has turned on his camera. I'm not sure if he wants to weigh in there.
Yeah, if I might.
Just before that happens, if I can second the motion just to move the process forward. Thank you.
Thank you. So there is a motion to continue this item. Vice Chair, if you want to restate your motion for everyone.
It was just a motion to continue this item for further discussion. I don't know if that would be to a next meeting or a special meeting, depending on timing. I think it can be to the next meeting.
Thank you. So there's a motion and a second. I'll like to hear from Tom and then we'll hear from Director Rogers and other committee members.
And the continuation could work, particularly if it's to a special meeting. Frankly, I think the horse has left the barn in terms of the categories that we could use this funding for. And just note, when we started with SCAG, when we heard there was $500,000 or more for funding, we thought we could actually use that to build housing, which would be nice. And we battled with SCAG over the issue. $500,000 isn't gonna support a lot of housing, but it might help with the purchase of a couple of perhaps homeless transitional units or permanent housing. We lost that battle. These are planning dollars. We went through a process that certainly wasn't perfect given how we were under the gun to get an application in. We've been awarded the funding. Those categories, I doubt, we'll be able to adjust with SCAG. However, what we can and will do, if this committee and the executive committee concur, is involve all of you in the scope of how that funding is used. And so with your continuance, which staff certainly supports, perhaps we will hold a special meeting and go over the terms of an agreement with Lyft to Rise and the terms of any study that is being done. And note again, these are planning dollars and you may not like the word study, but frankly, that's what this is all about. These are planning dollars coming from SCAG. So staff supports the recommendation and it might lead to a special meeting if all of you would be willing to do that.
Thank you. Director Rogers, if I can, because Director Rogers has had her hand up, and then we'll go to you. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that Tom answered my question. My question was, my understanding was that these funds were to be used for very special, narrow purpose for planning, and we didn't have any choice.
Thank you, Councilmember Music, and then I see Carrie Harmon has her hand up.
Okay, so just to clarify that these dollars cannot be used to put towards a navigation center. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's correct.
Okay. So basically, if we don't use it for this planning purpose, we lose it.
That's correct. And SCAG did ask us whether we wanted the money, and if not, they would use it for our region in some manner. So taking the choices, we opted to take the money and work with you on how best to use it.
Thank you. Do you have a sense of what SCAG was intending when they were going to spend it on our region for planning? You're muted, Tom.
And I should clarify, SCAG was willing to essentially administer the funds based on what we wanted to do with respect to planning. Among the things they like to do is have work on model ordinances, for example, model ordinances for accessory units, et cetera. And that is something we talked briefly to the planners about, but there wasn't much interest beyond one city perhaps in having a model ordinance that would apply to each of our cities.
Thank you, and that's based on conversations you did with the planners?
Yes.
Thank you. Carrie Harmon has her hand up, and then Councilmember Townsend.
I think some of it has been clarified, and that is that this has to be used for planning. And I think that all of us who are doers, and there's many doers on this committee, have a certain unease with planning to do something when we really just know that we need to create it. But I can tell you that from the county's perspective, we do need to know whether it's 10,000 or whether this committee is looking at what it would take to create just 2,500 units, what that cost is, and how we can pull down the dollars from the feds, the state, and also locally. And I think to that extent, the two proposals that are before us today would further those efforts, because what we really do have to create is a regional funding plan, you know, using a variety of sources, not just local sources, that can get us back to our production under redevelopment days. And unfortunately, there's a planning element to that and an analysis element that I don't think any of us have undertaken in Southern California since the demise of redevelopment. We've kind of just gotten stuck there. So I think there's an opportunity here, and I understand the unease. We got to at some point build stuff, but I think this will create a pathway there.
Thank you. Any other member comments before we vote on the motion to continue? Councilmember Townsend, sorry.
Thank you, Christy. Just kind of curious, is this redundant? Is this something that is all new? Is this something that planning and surveys and discussions have not been directed towards this question in the past? Are we just repeating the same thing and spending money for more surveys, i.e. the salt and sea, you know, that type of an issue? Just curious. Anybody have an answer to that?
Staff's position is that this is not redundant, and it is consistent with the feedback we heard from the executive committee early last year, and that they wanted more data to make some policy decisions in the future.
Thank you very much. That answers it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Thank you, Councilmember Jonathan.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of moving forward, I think it was mentioned that the horse is out of the barn. I think it can also be said that the cart was put before the horse, and that this is coming to us as kind of a fait accompli when perhaps it should have been extensive discussion about what our options were. And I hope that moving forward, when staff comes back to us, that A, they will provide us with options that will include other providers than Lift to Rise. That's number one. And number two, if it has to be planning, I think we've all had, you know, experience analysis by paralysis. The Salton Sea is perhaps the most egregious example. So if we're going to do planning, if the contract can somehow be tied into substantive follow-up with actual affordable housing, rather than just a theory, or we're going to raise $160 million somehow, we hope, I think something more substantive would make at least me feel more comfortable before we committed $500,000 in taxpayer funds. Because frankly, it could be that the county has better use of those funds I'll remind all of us that SCAG returned, what was it, Tom, $6 million at one point of funding. So sometimes as difficult a pill as that is to swallow, it's the most prudent and appropriate thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from members? And I didn't recognize Councilmember Delgado, who joined us from Coachella. Welcome. I think this might be your first time here with us. So welcome, happy to have you. Other comments from council members or members? Okay, so if I can add, I agree with the concerns about the process here. I think it was the timeline. So we had, I know, the deadline just in a few weeks after our meeting. And so we had a general discussion of general ideas and then never got to give direction about the final application. So if I can, perhaps make a friendly amendment to the motion to continue, which would, or maybe just need this in direction if the group agrees, is to check with SCAG to see, you know, what are the opportunities to change the application or to reallocate dollars. Because I don't want to see us leave dollars on the table. I would like to move forward in getting this money from our region. I trust us to do a better job since we're here on the ground. But I hear the concerns about making sure that this results in action, which we all want and which our community wants. So would you be able to bring that back, information from SCAG about the scope of work, you know, and what is possible in terms of negotiating or changing? I see Tom Kirk shaking his head yes and thumbs up. Okay, so any final discussion on that? So we will go ahead and take a vote. Erica, would you like a roll call vote for this one or consensus vote? Either way,
a consensus is
just consensus should work just fine. I think it sounds like there'll be general support for more information and continuing this item, and we'll work with you, Chair, on a potentially special meeting if our deadlines require it.
Thank you. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any abstentions? Any no votes? Seeing none, the motion to continue this item passes unanimously. Next item is item 6A, which is for discussion and action, the CV Housing First, where we are and where we are going in 2021. And this is from Tom Kirk. So you're gonna update us on the CV Housing First operations and then the Mobile Access Center for CV Housing First.
I am, and Tom Cox is going to help me with the update. And the presentation, it might be a little bit more elaborate than we needed it to be, but I did it in a relatively elaborate presentation because of you, Madam Chair. If you remember last week, you had asked me and CVAG staff to work with your police chief and city manager to help explain how Housing First coordinates with city efforts and for that matter, county efforts as well. So Greg Rodriguez also participated. And in that conversation, I realized I need to do a better job of understanding how Housing First relates to other programs and do a better job of explaining how Housing First works with our police departments and others. So if all of you will be a little bit patient, I've got a PowerPoint presentation that will help explain where our program came from, where it is today, how we're performing in our first 45 days as an in-house operation, and where we're going next. And I promise not to use very much jargon, mostly because I don't understand any of it. And if you hit me up with acronyms, I'll turn to Tom Cox and others to help me with them. So CV200. And for those of you that have your little video screens on the far right, you can either minimize them directly or move your little video screen to where you don't see it yourself. So you could just see the presentation or just one of us speaking. I'm going to give you a little recap on Housing First, how we're doing so far on CV200, our Housing First program. Try to describe how our program relates to other programs, particularly shelters, and what we're doing next. And most of you know this story, that our program at CVAG really started with a concern raised by the city of Indio and Coachella that many of the services had been concentrated in that part of the valley and more needed to be done in the western part of the Coachella Valley. And the county and CVAG started Roy's. We retained Jewish Family Services to operate the shelter. We had 120 beds there. And we helped thousands of people. But you might remember, we had some transportation challenges. Roy's was operating just north of the freeway. There were no bus lines. And we had a transportation program that ate up about a third of our budget at Roy's. And in 2017, our operator said, so long. They didn't want to operate the program anymore. And there were changes going on in our thinking and our evolution of thinking about how to address homelessness, as well as the county's need for a long-term mental health care facility. The county expressed interest in transforming Roy's into a long-term facility. That county facility with close to, I think it's 90 beds, is now operating, started operating in August of last year. So in 2017, we closed the doors to Roy's and opened the doors to a Housing First program. Through a competitive process, we hired Path of Life Ministries to operate the program. And during that time, as Director Rogers knows, the Healthcare District commissioned Barbara Poppy to do an assessment of homeless programs in the Coachella Valley and really focused her efforts and recommendations on how to improve Housing First in the Coachella Valley. And for those that may not know what Housing First is all about, a quick primer. What it means is whatever type of homeless client there is, the chronically homeless, the person that may end up on the street because of health issues or economic issues, a recently homeless person, or even a family, the Housing First motto is put them into a house, put a roof over their head, as quickly as possible, and then work on services, wraparound services, find them jobs or social services, address drug or alcohol problems, address mental health issues, or even criminal issues. And conversely, when we operated Roy's, we kind of did the opposite. We said to the homeless client, if you have current drug problems, we wouldn't allow you in. If you had current mental health issues that were serious, of course we wouldn't let you in. And if you had violent felonies in your background, or certainly sex offenses, we didn't want to let you in because we had families and women in the shelter. And so when you looked at the homeless clientele, we certainly let families in. We let the recently homeless in, but we didn't let a lot of the chronically homeless in. And frankly, when you ask them, they didn't want to come in often anyway. They don't want to be in a shelter with 100 other people. And yet it's the chronically homeless that are really affecting our police services. Your sheriffs, deputies, and police are spending an inordinate amount of time addressing the chronically homeless. The hospitals are also negatively affected by this. The emergency rooms are negatively affected by the chronically homeless using emergency rooms for less than life-threatening issues. And your commercial areas, These are your commercial areas are complaining about homeless at their front doors or in the alleys behind. And because of that, Councilmember Gutierrez, I was going to give your colleague a hard time. We certainly heard from this man a lot, but Mr. Carnevale is not any different than many of you who see the chronically homeless in your communities and wonder what is being done to address Mary or Juan or John, who they see every day with that shopping cart. So as you know, we started, in fact, CV 100 last year, really focusing on getting the chronically homeless off the street. Tom Cox was retained well over a year ago. He leads our homeless program. He's on the line with me now. In December, just a couple months ago, he started visiting with deputies and police from across the Coachella Valley and developing a by-name list of what we thought were going to be the 100 frequent flyers. In other words, those that cost our communities the most money and are taking up room in our emergency rooms and in the back of squad cars. We thought it was going to be a list of 100 names. It's actually a list of 200 names. And we have that today. And so our in-house program started when our contract with Path of Life lapsed and we didn't renew it at the end of 2020. And we started engaging wholeheartedly in an in-house program. Tom and I and Erica have hired three very capable staff. It's hard to introduce them in a COVID environment, and I hate doing so with masks on, so we asked them to take some photos. Anise Smith is the supervisor. Congratulations again to Anise for recently passing the California bar. And we have two very capable caseworkers and outreach workers, staff Stephanie Chambeau and Ivan Tenorio, who are also on the line with us today. So what have they been doing? They've been working for 40 plus days. What are our results? And the staff report identified the two primary ways that we get the chronically homeless off of the street and into permanent housing or some other positive exit from homelessness are rapid resolution and our crisis stabilization units. Rapid resolution is the cheaper and easier way, generally, to get people off the street, and it doesn't work all the time. It may be a broken car, it may be first and last month's rent, but some way to quickly address a homeless issue and get somebody into permanent housing or reconnected with family. In the last 40 days, we've done that three times. Tom Cox, can you share this client's story?
Thank you, Tom. This is Mrs. P. She's on the CV 200 by name list. She was living out of her car and her car was repossessed. So our rapid resolution funding, we helped her get a car back. We helped her pay a deposit and first month's rent. And now she's living in her own senior low income apartment. She was moved in Friday last week.
As I mentioned, the second primary way we get people off the street are crisis stabilization units. And I hate the term, they're apartments. And we talked about the difference between a shelter system, which we desperately need in the Coachella Valley and is incredibly important to our overall efforts, and the housing first. Some of the chronically homeless will not go into a shelter, nor will shelters accept them. But we do accept people into apartments. And we accept them with their pets, their partners, and their shopping cart of property. And oftentimes we wouldn't do that at Roy's, and I know it's a challenge for many shelters to do the same thing. So our crisis stabilization unit program has been successful already too. 16 of those 200 have been put into crisis stabilization units and exited them. And I don't want to overstate this in some ways, because of course, some of these were already in crisis stabilization units as a part of the Path of Life program. So they didn't come in and out necessarily within the last 40 days, but certainly in the last 60, 65 days they did. Tom, what's this gentleman's story?
This is Mr. H. He was also on the CV200 by name list. He was a veteran and homeless for 40 years. He was in our crisis stabilization unit, as you mentioned. His case manager was able to get his veteran paperwork together. And this is Mr. H standing outside of his senior low income apartment, and he was moved in last month.
And sometimes it's hard to categorize. And as morbid as this sounds, we did have somebody come into one of our units and then go into permanent housing and unfortunately die. So we've got them in the other category, as again, as morbid that might sound. So in 40 days, 20 exits. And I don't think we're gonna have 20 exits every 40 days in this program, but we did set a goal in-house of 90 exits within our first year. 90 exits addressing your biggest challenges on the streets in all of your communities. That's a big deal. Since it's hard for everybody to applaud, I figured that we'd applaud. And that's not for me, it certainly is for Tom, and certainly is for Anise and her team. They've already worked hard, they've already showed results, and they're doing good work. Part of the conversation last week with Palm Springs Police Chief and staff there was, well, how does the CV200 program relate to other programs? And I want to emphasize, we need shelter systems and housing first programs in the Coachella Valley. We know that shelters work for a lot of the homeless, and we know housing first will and is working for the chronically homeless. And I want to put this in perspective. Housing first will help 20 people or 30 people this month. Shelters will help hundreds of people this month. So it's a different type of system. And so are the budgets. And this is on many of your agendas at your cities. We continue to seek $100,000 from each of the cities. We're expecting almost all the cities, or perhaps all the cities, to contribute this year. That's a big deal. And our budget is significantly less than the shelter's budgets. And the cost per client, again, dealing with the chronically homeless is expensive. We're putting one person up in an apartment and having intensive case management around them. That's a very different program and approach than is used by the shelter system. But there's a reason for that, and I want to remind you. The cost to society of frequent flyers is enormous. And we've seen estimates of homeless individuals costing our society between $30,000 and $100,000 a year. The chronically homeless are certainly at the top end of that scale. You remember the Desert Sun analysis? Successful exits. When we operated Roy's, our quote successful exits were in the 5 to 10% range. And that's pretty typical of the shelter system. Housing first, even under Path of Life. Successful exits are 65%. I think we're gonna beat that in the in-house housing first program we're currently running. In other words, when we meet a client, how likely is it that we're gonna have them end up in a permanent house or reconnect with family or some other successful exit from homelessness? Moving forward, last part of the program in this discussion. We're obviously planning on building on the success of the first 40 days. Getting 20 people off of the streets is a huge accomplishment our first 40 days. And we're gonna take those empty units. And of course, they're not empty now. We're putting people in all the time and fill them up with more people. And I know some of you are gonna see those two empty houses or empty icons anyway, at the bottom of your screen. What does that mean? Well, sometimes we put people into the units that are not on the CV200 list. Things come up. Your sheriffs and deputies and police say, we have somebody else that we didn't previously identify. Please work with us to get them permanent housing. And we put them into our units if we have space. And for those two that are on the left, we like to have one or two units always empty so that we could respond quickly if somebody has an emergency situation. Tom Cox, this client is in one of our units today. Who is he?
This is M. He's also on the CB200 list and currently in a crisis stabilization unit. And I'd just like to thank the Palm Desert team. They have two H Hope workers, Alex and Donna, and Deputy Nelson. We were able to collaborate our team with their resources, and M is currently in he's receiving case management. More to be determined. Our goal is to get him into permanent housing, but we have a lot of intensive case management to do with M to get him, you know, ready for that. So he's currently being helped and off the streets.
Next story, Tom.
This is a couple from Indio who were living in their car. They're being case managed, and they've been in the unit for about a week, and one of them has already received a job. So we're on a fast track of 30 days to get both of them working and to get them into their own place that they will pay without a rental subsidy. So more to be determined with this couple.
So again, we're gonna continue to move people in and out of these units. The crisis stabilization units are the linchpin of our program. The second part of the staff report involves the mobile access center. You've received an update on that. We received a $250,000 HHAP grant. We're going to convert this bus to a bus like this. It's a mobile access center. Yes, we're using the boxing club in Palm Springs as our access center, but the challenging thing about homeless folks is, of course, they can't all get to the access center. And we want to be able to reach out to homeless people wherever they are in the Coachella Valley. The grant does allow for two full-time equivalent employees over the next 2 years. We're thinking about hiring perhaps one initially and see if we need another one. And this will allow us to reach out in encampments and do more street outreach and more case management. Additionally, as Director Rogers knows, and I know Donna Craig is on the line as well, we're working with the Desert Healthcare District. The Healthcare District has been a huge partner in the program. Obviously, they commissioned the Barbara Poppy Report. They also provided matching dollars to city contributions in the past. And we continue to work with them on how their money can be used to do more in the Housing First program. Even without a financial contribution from them yet this year, we're reaching out to hospitals and asking them who are their frequent flyers, the people that are in their emergency rooms. There may be some overlap with our current 200 list, but we suspect there are others that are showing up at hospitals that are not showing up necessarily on the radar of police and sheriffs. So we're reaching out to all three of the hospitals to augment the list and really round out our program. And we'd like to work with the Desert Healthcare District to increase the program. And obviously that requires funding, do more rapid resolution, work with the hospitals on discharge planning and respite care. Last slide, just to summarize. We want to build on our early success. I'm proud of the team and the program. They've done fantastic work already. We're working and we're reaching out, of course, to the cities and the county to make sure that that regular contribution continues despite the challenges right now in many city budgets. We received the grant for Mobile Access Center. We're going to implement it. And we want to expand and target and address the emergency room frequent flyers, work with the hospitals, seek a continued financial partnership with a healthcare district. And that ends my long but hopefully comprehensive presentation. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to address any questions you and your colleagues might have.
Thank you so much, Tom. We love putting you to work. So thank you for the really comprehensive presentation and update. I thought this was important to do, and thank you for staff for all your work on this to update our new members. I think it's a great orientation. I might ask that staff, this is recorded, we could send it out to all of our members who aren't currently here and use it as an orientation too for new members. So thank you. I'll open it up to questions and comments by committee members. First, I want to apologize. I didn't recognize Councilmember Burton, so from Blythe. So welcome. I think this is your first time here in this committee as well. So we're grateful to have you. Thank you for being here. So are there any questions or comments from committee members? I see Councilmember Jonathan, and then Councilmember Gutierrez, and then Councilmember Townsend.
I didn't catch that. Was I the first to go, Christy? Okay, just a single short question for a change. By the way, Tom, that with all the animations that was and the content, that was one of the best PowerPoint presentations I've seen in recent history, which makes me certain that you're not the one that prepared it. So congratulations to whoever did.
Oh, that
ouch.
Low blow.
No, really, it was excellent. I love the content and yeah, the presentation was amazing. Very quick question. You mentioned 90 exits. Can you just clarify what exits mean? Does that mean they go into other resource type wraparound resources with transitional or supportive permanent housing? What do you mean by exits?
Well, I hope that there are no more of the singular morbidity related exit. Tom Cox, describe what an exit means.
So simple answer. Permanent housing, permanent programs, or reunification with families. Some of those permanent housing could be ongoing subsidy for rent, or we're trying to get as many people to self-resolve or to pay their rent, and the official category for that is rental with no subsidy.
Thank you, Councilmember Gutierrez.
Thank you. First of all, I say congratulations for all the success that you're having. I know homeless is a very constant issue for all the cities. And some of the questions that I have is one of them. Tom, do you know the amount of homeless people that we have in the entire Coachella Valley?
No, but we do get of course.
An approximate number.
Yeah, there's a... a survey done every year. What's our last number, Tom or Erica? Do you remember, or even Greg?
I'm not going to remember off the top of my head, but I think it was about 890, I believe, in the valley.
890.
Yeah.
Just roughly, just to get an idea. Now, out of those that have been assisted into permanent housing, or currently permanent housing. Now, do they have any drug issues, any issues that might prevent them from being housed for the next 3 to 5 years?
They usually have, we call it the trimorbidity. They have substance abuse issues. They have undiagnosed mental health and maybe chronic medical conditions. A lot of times their disability could be taking drugs. And so we provide support for that. But again, that's kind of an individual's choice to take that on. And we certainly provide what we can to keep them in housing. As Council Member Jonathan mentioned earlier, we provide the wraparound services while they're in the units, but we've also been, you know, we work with them to get them the services that they need. Mental health is a big issue as well, but substance abuse also.
Now, I see that two of the four that you mentioned in the presentation were, one was a veteran who went into senior housing and low income senior housing. And the other one was also a lady that also did the same thing. Now, the others that do have to pay to be housed, is CVAC helping them, or how is the rent being paid?
So these individuals, they either have an income or benefit, and based on their struggles or challenges, they might be asked to pay in a subsidized program like 30% of their income or benefit. But the majority, they, you know, we try to get them income, try to get them working, and then they resolve in the non-subsidized housing.
Okay. My last question is, did you receive any funds from the Desert Healthcare District?
Yes, we've received a lot of funds from the Desert Healthcare District. And in the past, the healthcare district provided a one-to-one match. So if the city of Cathedral City provided $50,000 or $100,000, the healthcare district provided a one-to-one match for the program. That one-to-one match really affected contributions in 2019 and 2020, but there's no longer a match, and that's what I was referring to, working with Director Rogers and her colleagues on the scope of a potential contribution and partnership moving forward.
Well, I'm very happy to see that this program is being handled locally and not out of Riverside. So that, I think that's making a big difference. And you guys are doing a great job so far from what I see. Thank you.
Thank you. And you'll have to, I put a photo of your colleague up there to give him a hard time that in some ways he, along with the chair and the chair emeritus have really shaped the program and where it's gone. But his constant nagging about the chronically homeless has really focused our efforts on that part of the problem, which is affecting all of our cities.
Thank you. I'll let him know to continue to do that.
Thank you, Council Members. So I see Council Member Townsend and then Council Member Music.
Thank you, Chrissy. I just want to say, Tom, beautiful presentation. The one thing it did for me is, you know, through the years, you answered and brought back into life the way the whole program works, which sometimes we forget what all the intricate lines and what's behind the whole thing. You sure brought that into full focus. A great job. And I ditto everything else that everybody else is saying. And I certainly would like to have a copy of that.
Thanks. And you know, with respect to, I want to appreciate that. And it really is, I did prepare the presentation, and it's not a very easy one to send to folks and have them understand it. What I would offer, while I will send it out to anybody that wants it, what I'd offer is that maybe we show it to your executive committee colleagues on Monday, and I'd be happy also to give a presentation to your councils. Many of you are considering $100,000 contributions, and you want to know how that money is going to be put to use, and demonstrating that we're already doing good things with an in-house program, which many of you might remember I resisted doing, might be very useful in helping your colleagues understand what the program that you've shaped.
Thank you. I think that's really important. I'm going to take you up on that for the city of Palm Springs, because I think it's also important to educate the public. People don't understand that, you know, our program is different, that it's a housing first model, that we are, you know, the results don't always reach people. So I think that's really important to educate our entire community about. So we'll see you doing this presentation again. I saw Council Member Music.
Yes. First of all, great, great job. I love the presentation. And since we have two new council members and I think a new attitude, I would like, love for you, Tom, to do that presentation as soon as possible at one of our council meetings.
And I take you up on that. And I also want to share that one of your colleagues that is no longer on the council was also shaped what we're doing today. And I'll share with all of you, and I don't think he would mind if I did so. I received a really pleasant note from him over the holidays, being very supportive of the direction we're headed in the homelessness program. So, all of our thinking has evolved, and I know we're doing good work. And I sure wish we could do more of it and get everybody off the street. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but let's try to get as many as we can off the street.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Council Member Delgado and then Director Rogers.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I just have a few questions. I did go out with, I know Tom Cox was also one of the attendees when we went out with Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine with their street caravan. And we did come across some transient individuals that did express wanting to go into housing. A female was undocumented. However, she did have family members. Her children are all, born here, as well as her partner. And so one of my questions is when we come across a challenge like that is, would they be able to go into any of these housing, especially if they have family members that live here? And my second question is that when we went out, we also came across many individuals who expressed needing medical attention and services. It was late in the evening. And so I'm wondering if there's any resources that we're giving these individuals as far as how to transport them to clinics. Obviously, even if there are some of them who have expressed wanting to go into housing and some who haven't, but are we then connecting them to resources so that they can receive the medical attention that they need? Thank you.
I'd like to answer your second question first. Our collaborative relationship with Volunteers in Medicine, and we also work with some of the hospitals and some of the medical outreach teams. We're working with some medical students from UCR and Cal State. Volunteers in Medicine is set up to do no insurance services, and so they do an excellent job with that. Dr. Rosa Lucas, I've worked with her for years. So our goal though is to get, this is the most difficult sometimes, is an ID. And an ID will keep us from getting someone their birth certificate or a medical card or medical insurance or even a cell phone. So we work on that. Once we get their ID, we can get them signed up in the pipeline of services for medical, and then there's other options. Substance abuse, medical, mental health are all things that are part of that, that we, with our collaborative resources, we've been doing a better job. To answer your first question, I would like to thank Greg Rodriguez, who is also on our team. He's been a tremendous resource to getting us connections with the congressman's office and the assemblyman's office, where we're kind of learning how to do some of this for the very first time, but Councilperson Delgado, the one woman that you were referring to, we're working getting her papers and things that she needs in order to get, you know, basic necessities like housing or food stamps. And so that's in the process. I would like for it to be faster than the process is, but we're working on that, and we're kind of learning the channels to navigate. And she's certainly eligible for our crisis stabilization unit housing, you know, when a unit becomes available. And I've with this individual, I've talked with her over the last 6 years, and we're trying to work with her family member, who does have the supporting paperwork to receive housing. And so, you know, we're working on that process as well. And this is a good example of on our Tuesday night outreach with Volunteers in Medicine, we're encountering people that are not on the CV200. And so when you were out with us, a lot of individuals weren't on the CV200, but we're still, you know, trying to help them the best we can.
Thank you, Tom. And then just a follow-up question is, I know one of the biggest challenges is not having, you know, the correct paperwork for many of these individuals to go into housing, and how long is it taking in some situations to get that paperwork? And are there some individuals where, you know, it's just been many months and not being able to get that paperwork for them is really the barrier that keeps them from going into housing?
Normally the current process is taking 6 months to a year. I'd like to tell you that just this morning, Ivan, who's on our team, we found out that we were paying for birth certificates with some sites, and we found out that if you're homeless, that you can get your birth certificate for free. So we're going to look into that, and hopefully that 6 months to a year, you know, we got to come up with something that's working better. And, you know, we often say we don't have enough doors to put people in, but, you know, just getting an ID and getting the documentation like birth certificates that are necessary for housing. I'm certainly going to be working with my team and Greg and, you know, our other congressmen and assembly to try to make that happen, because, well, that helps us get to our goal of 90. So, but, you know, better yet, it helps get people off the streets that, you know, it's going to be hot real soon. So I'm hoping to, you know, we can streamline this.
Thank you so much, Tom. And thank you for all the great work that you're doing out there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions or comments from members?
Chair, just a quick suggestion. I know the presentations to council are important. I've also reached out and asked for one for a public safety commission. So, you know, I think the more they understand about the non-police work that's being done to address homelessness, the better, because they get the messages from our public as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rogers.
Thank you. And thank you, Tom. And Tom, for the great presentation. I just want to underline the need for emergency shelters. I know, Tom, you said that there's not enough doors to put people in, and I think that that's always been our problem. And I'm just wondering if there's, question number one is, you know, where are the doors? How can we find them? I invite any and all of you to come to the Friday medical clinic that's held at Our Lady of Guadalupe, and the student nurses at Cal State San Bernardino Palm Desert campus nursing program holds a nursing clinic for the homeless there, and very well attended. And there's sometimes 30, 40 people there that need housing. So, you know, what are the plans of where we can put those people as soon as we can? Number two is I personally am looking forward to seeing a proposal from CVAG that to the healthcare district for the funding that we can match. I know that it's in the budget. I also wanted to ask about what kind of outreach that Tom Cox has that we can have for the people that can work with them. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I think Greg Rodriguez may be best positioned to talk about permanent housing and county, city of Palm Springs, and other efforts. As long as he's not going to hit somebody driving while doing
something. I'm parked by a date field and my phone actually overheated, but great question, Carol. And of course, I talk about this a lot recently, is we're doing, and it's exampled by Tom's great presentation about our great ability for outreach, for transitional housing, for case management. The problem is the lack of permanent doors, and that's an ongoing issue. So one, the county is working and with Path of Life, believe it or not, on landlord locator programs for additional transitional units and permanent supportive units for Section 8 housing. And then the larger conversation, and I missed the discussion earlier, but many of you know the partnership between the county and Lift to Rise on the whole housing collaborative action network for a pipeline and development of a catalyst fund and actual construction of permanent affordable housing. The county additionally is working through the Housing Authority. Carrie's actually on the line too, with our Housing Homelessness Prevention and Workforce Solutions Department, to identify more streams of not only, again, transitional housing, but permanent supportive units, as well as affordable housing streams. Additionally too, Carol, and you know, we are still in conversations on some type of overnight emergency type access center, navigation center, whatever word you want to use, in the west end of the valley. It all comes down to resources, of course, and so those discussions are still happening.
Thank you. Other questions or comments by members?
Chair, can I respond to Director Rogers' comments about outreach? This is an exciting time in the Coachella Valley because we, our CVAG team is working with law enforcement, we're working with hospitals, but we're also working with, you know, volunteers in medicine, and we've done some outreach with Borrego Health. And we've got some great opportunities to, the trimorbidity that I talked about, the medical, the mental health, and the substance abuse. And I met with Diane Vines, who is in charge of a group of nurses. And so we're sharing our outreach schedule just to go out instead of just case managers and police, but we might be bringing some nurses and mental health resources. And I'm really excited about that because just like we can't get everybody to the access center, that coupled with this Coachella Valley Mobile Access Center, I think we're going to be really effective about reaching people with some needs. You know, our primary goal is the CV200 because, you know, I've been tasked with the 90 permanent exits to housing, but, you know, we can help a few people along the way. And believe it or not, sometimes an ID is the most important thing to get people the desperate resources they need.
Thank you. Any final comments before we move to the next item? This is just a general presentation and discussion, right, Tom? You don't need any direction.
That's correct.
Thank you. Any final comments? Thank you to everyone for your work on this. And I want to highlight and thank Director Rogers, who really has spearheaded the collaboration between our cities and agencies. So the match from the Desert Healthcare District was so crucial to getting nearly every single city to contribute to this effort. And I would urge all the members, as the funding requests come again, and Tom has to go to each city and beg for the $100,000 that we keep committing every single year, ask each member to be an advocate for this work and for the continued funding, because it really is a model of success of collaboration for the state in terms of a region working together on homelessness like this. So our next item is item 6B, which is statewide funding, helping homeless during COVID-19. And this is from Greg Rodriguez, who has graciously joined us from the event with the governor, I think. So thank you for being here, Greg.
Yeah, thank you, Christy. Hear me okay? So, yeah, great. Yeah, I apologize. We had a last minute notice yesterday of the governor coming into Coachella today to visit the vaccination site. Obviously, we're a leader in the state as far as vaccinating agriculture people. We actually did get to put in his ear a plug for additional home key funding. And when we actually mentioned that to him, he actually made reference to the success of our Project Room Key. The staff report is pretty extensive, but I did just want to highlight a couple of points on each project, specifically on Project Rimkey first. Again, we as a county started this even before the governor announced this last April. Again, a big shout out to Carrie Harmon on the line for her leadership in this. As you note in the report too, a lot of that success has been in the Coachella Valley in the 4th District, with the largest number really of placements, not only in the hotel, but actually exits to permanent housing. And you can see in the data that exit to permanent housing has been across many of the cities throughout the Coachella Valley. It's also important to note too, that as we place individuals into the hotel, or as we did over the past year, we have set up a permanent exit plan to permanent housing. So it's not just to house them during the COVID pandemic, but to actually work with them to address issues like substance use, mental health issues, physical health issues, and then an exit plan to permanent housing that's been quite successful. Again, exceeding data from a purely shelter model. We additionally are in discussions with the county and CV Housing First program. As many of you may have known, or for those who don't, the Project Rimkey has been actually extended through the 30th of September. It was supposed to end on the 31st of December. The county had already made plans to continue the program on a scaled back version, but luckily with the federal and state government extending that, we're gonna be able to continue that program, and we'll be unveiling some new operations relatively soon as we get some okay from the executive office. With that being said though, CV Housing First is in talks with myself and the county on possibly utilizing extra units or some of those hotel units as basically crisis stabilization units. So kind of expanding the number that we have, and then the CV Housing First team will deal with the case management around that. So it provides us an ability for free rental units, but again, doing the case management and exiting people to permanent housing. So to enable to expand the CV Housing First program. And then the other program I wanted to just expand on a little bit is the Project Home Key. And as many of you know, because we discussed this when the application came in August, I believe, it's hard to believe it's been that long, in a very tight timeline. And we brought that to the CVAG Homelessness Committee on the application for the Ivy Palm Hotel in Palm Springs, which would have been about 85 permanent supportive units. Unfortunately, as mentioned in the staff report, that property was in bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy court denied the county's acquisition of that property. Luckily, we thought we were going to have to return that money to the state, but thanks to the work of Mike Walsh and Heidi and Carrie from the county, we're able to maintain those funds that were allocated for the Ivy Palm project, and to purchase another 67 manufactured units in the community of Oasis. So increasing that project to 107 units of permanent housing for those that are living in dilapidated conditions in the Eastern Valley, or those that didn't have any housing at all. So that was a really good way to utilize that funding from the state. Again, we made the pitch today to hopefully bring back some more Project Home Key funding. With the loss though of those permanent supportive units at the Ivy Palm, with the help of Christy, the city of Palm Springs, as well as the county, we've been able to secure and allocate funding as well as approve three projects within the city of Palm Springs that will bring a number of permanent supportive units. All three of those projects have an element of permanent supportive units in their affordable housing portfolio. And then in addition, the county is continuing to work with the city of Coachella, as well as Coachella Valley Housing Coalition, with the city of Indio on additional permanent supportive units. So this goes back to Director Rogers' point about housing units. I know Sabi had some concerns about the lack or the loss of that Ivy Palm project in the permanent units, but we've been able to, with the projects that are in the pipeline, we'll be able to not only meet those 85 units throughout not only Palm Springs, but add an additional hundreds of units throughout the Coachella Valley. So those are the highlights, and happy to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you. I have just two questions, if I can go first so I remember them. One is, I didn't see in the staff report the data about where people in Project Rimkey are being housed. by city by city. I know that the sheriff's department sends out that data to the police chiefs and public safety. Our police chief has raised that we're hosting a number of Project Room Key motel units in Palm Springs, which makes sense because we have a lot of hotel and motel rooms, and we're happy to do that. But there's been public safety impacts, and I know some cities are not hosting any. So in the spirit of regional collaboration, I'm wondering if we can continue to analyze the data about where people are coming from, because Councilmember Gutierrez raised the point in time count that we have 890 people counted, but we think that it might be double or triple that if you talk to providers. And then that helps us get more data about where people are coming from, where they're experiencing homelessness, where they're currently being housed either temporarily or permanently through these programs. And then thinking about, you know, the impacts on the cities that, you know, are carrying the weight of providing those sites.
Yeah, and it's a great point, Christy. And as you know, when we had the conversation with you and the city last week, I'm getting you the data as far as, you know, those that are placed in Palm Springs hotels where, you know, they're from, the vast majority are from the city of Palm Springs, according to the data. The county right now too is, we're changing vendors on our homeless management information system, HMIS, and the new vendor that we're going through, that migration is actually taking place as we speak. It should go fully live within hopefully about 3 weeks. But it's a much better system as far as tracking data. Last year, this goes to the point in time count issue as well, is we've gotten much better as a county in our methodology in counting, using technology as well as utilizing our public safety and outreach teams to identify. So that's how we've seen our numbers increase over the last couple of years. And we've did some GIS mapping as well last year on that. Unfortunately, and we were going to increase that type of technological use this year, but unfortunately, due to COVID, almost all COCs within continuum of cares, excuse me, for the acronym, throughout the state have decided not to do the actual unsheltered homeless point in time count just because of safety issues. However, though, again, through our HMIS system, as well as the county is working on another database system with GIS mapping on the concentration of homeless individuals, not only, you know, large encampments, but small encampments, and then also the service providers as well.
Thank you. That would be helpful to have all the data and then share it with this committee that we have access to, because we anecdotally have seen homelessness increase a lot in Palm Springs. And we're trying to figure out, you know, obviously we all expect homelessness to increase because of the pandemic, the housing crisis, you know, all of the crises that people are facing right now. But for public policy reasons, it would be helpful to know, you know, where those people are coming from and how to best serve them. I have one other question about FEMA reimbursement, and you might not know now, but maybe you could update the committee later. So my understanding is that the new administration changed the FEMA reimbursement to 100%, and that includes homelessness and housing services. So I know the county is getting a large influx of money for rental assistance and then is restarting some of these programs. And my question is, it seems like the cities are able to provide housing and homelessness services and get FEMA reimbursement for that, like we've been getting for other things. So if the cities can assist you, and if we can get reimbursed at 100% for that, I think that would be helpful for our city and probably all the members to know about.
Yeah, and I'll play naive on this. And I know that Carrie Harmon's on the phone, she may be able, on the call, she may be able to answer that as well. You know, the question is do cities want to take on that role of homeless services provider and housing? And if you do, that's great. and figure out what reimbursement methods are. But you are correct. They did change where it used to be 75-25, 75% reimbursement from FEMA. And now that's gone to 100%. I don't know if Carrie would have anything to add to that or not.
And I think we're happy that the county is doing so much on housing and homelessness. But the question is just in this pandemic, if we can get 100% reimbursement, if there are things that the county needs assistance on that maybe the cities can do and get reimbursed for, that might be a helpful conversation for later. Carrie, do you have anything to add before we move on, or Erica?
I think Carrie is not on the meeting anymore. I was just going to say we can follow up with the county chair. That's a good point. And we'll double back with you and the cities on that. And if there's an opportunity, we'll do some direct engagement with the committee members as well.
Thank you. Seems like a good opportunity to get reimbursed 100% for activities. Director Rogers.
Yes, I have a question for Greg, and it has to do with the cooling centers for the summer. I know that, you know, we had funding and then we had placement, no funding. And I'm just wondering if there's a plan going forward now for this coming summer.
Great question, Carol. Thank you. Instead of waiting for May to deal with this, I have started those conversations. Luckily, there is a large allocation of ESG, which is Emergency Solutions Grant funding that the county is receiving. And so I'm in conversations with the CDRM as well as the county in submitting an application for funding of those three centers over the summer. So yes, those talks are in process.
Thank you. Other questions or comments from members? I don't see anyone raising their hand and I don't see any hands. Any final comments from staff before I move on? This is just an information item and really appreciate the update from the county and from Greg, who's been doing so much good work on this. I think there's confusion from cities and from the public and members, you know, what the county does, what CVAG does, what the city's roles are in that. So having those conversations about all the work that's happening, I think is really important, especially as people ask, you know, what are we doing every single day? And the county really has been a leader in housing people during the pandemic. And I hope you will continue and get all those Project Room Key and Home Key people into permanent housing. So thank you. The next item is, let's see. So the next item is our informational items. So we have the attendance record that you can see in the packet. We also have a funding update for the CV Housing First, which is in the packet, and a report on aging homeless in Riverside County, which is a really good report if you didn't read that yet. So first I'd like to go to ex officio updates. If ex officio members could raise your hand, you can do that in the participants panel on Zoom or *9 if you are on the phone, and we will recognize you and hear your update. We'll have a few seconds of silence here as we admit any of the ex officio members and unmute them. But Erica, if you want to run this
part. We do have a caller. We have an attendee on the phone from, and they should be able to unmute themselves now.
Thank you. Go ahead. It's a phone number ending in 2933. If you can unmute and present.
Chair, well, oh, there we go.
Good morning. This is Darla Burkett from the CVRM. Can you hear me?
Darla, welcome. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't get on Zoom. I was in the car, but I just want to report that we have been COVID-free for 5 weeks now, which is a good thing. We had quite a run for a while. We're doing well. We're working with 6 agencies, accepting people, all 3 hospitals, the AB 109 program, and the police department in Indio, and any police department that brings people our way. But we are thriving. We house 14 people in our Housing First program in the last 2 months, so that was a good number. And just listening in, hearing to all the good news, I'm just wanted to get our name out there too, that we're doing great things in Indio. We have a couple of beds available. We did a COVID vaccine clinic for 65 and over, and we're having another one for all the clients and maybe some staff through Riverside County. So all things are good here. Thank you.
Thank you, Darla. Thank you so much for your work. We appreciate it, not just for Indio, but for the whole Coachella Valley. Other ex officio member updates.
Chair, I don't see any.
Thank you. Director Rogers.
Yeah, I had a question for Darla. I know that the shelters require a COVID test, negative test, in order to be admitted. And I think the issue is that it takes 2 or 3 days to get results. And I'm just wondering how that's handled.
Well, we have luckily a block away, literally. We drive all the incomers there, and Premier Health Clinic has a 20-minute turnaround test, and it's free of charge with an IEHP card. And we have spent the $120 on a couple people that didn't have a card yet, but that's how we let people in same day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And it looks like there might be an update about the report on aging while homeless. I got a comment. If you want to jump in as for an ex officio member.
Chair, I think that was in case there were any questions in the report.
Okay, thank you. So not seeing any other ex officio member updates, we will go to the next item, which is public comment on non-agenda items. This is the time and place for members of the public to address the homeless committee on items of general interest within the purview of this committee. Please limit your comments to 2 minutes. Erica, are there any public comments on non-agenda items?
I don't see any. We've received none.
Thank you. And for the public, you would press *9 or raise your hand on Zoom to do that. The next item is announcements. So we have our upcoming meetings, the homeless committee. Remember, we're dark next month. We go on and off every other month. So our next meeting would be April 21st, 2021 at 10 a.m. Our next executive committee meeting is Monday, February 22nd. That's this coming Monday at 4:30 p.m. That will be on Zoom as well. Those links are on the website. Are there any other announcements from members or at this time? I see Councilmember Jonathan.
Thank you, Chair. Super briefly, up there in the informational items, I think somewhere under financial report was buried an audit report that I want to make sure our members were aware of. It was requested by the executive committee a while back. They wanted an actual audit of how the funds utilized by CVAG homelessness program, to make sure that everything's good. I'm happy to report that in your packet, you'll see a report from our auditors. The Finance Committee reviewed that report with them, I think last week, and it was a clean opinion. So that's important for all of us to know, and I think that good news will be shared with the Executive Committee as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Jonathan, for your leadership on that, on the budget committee, and for updating this committee. We appreciate it. Any other announcements? I know Councilmember Delgado and Councilmember Burton are new to this committee, so we didn't give you the time at the beginning, but if you'd like, you can say a few words now before we adjourn. And introduce yourself or any other announcements, or you don't have to, and we will adjourn. Councilmember Delgado.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to thank everyone and thank the staff on the homelessness. You're doing a wonderful job. I know there's many challenges out there, and I know that new ones arise all the time. And so I thank you for your effort and your dedication. As I had mentioned, that I had went out last week, and Tom Cox was also there. And I know that he had been doing that for a while as far as visiting the
or joining Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine. And so I thank him for that as well. And other than that, I just want to thank everyone for your hard work. And I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Delgado. We're happy to have you here. Councilmember Burton, I know you're not on video anymore. Would you like to say a few words and introduce yourself before we adjourn? If not, I know he was driving. Okay, well, I know we're usually a tight-knit group and we used to be together in person. And so we look forward to the day that we can all be back in person together. Are there any final announcements before we adjourn? Seeing none, we will go ahead and adjourn at 11:40 a.m. Thank you all for your important work on this, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the next meeting. Bye, take care.